All right, who's excited about game day? Anybody excited about next weekend? Oh my word, this is going to be awesome. It always is, and we've got a newbie coming to the stage this year, which is going to be awesome. Facing off against Eric, and you know, he's going to do awesome as well. I really know that he will. So it's going to be a great day. Hope you'll plan to be here. Invite your friends, as we've been saying. This is one of the best days, most anticipated days. There's nothing better than walking into church with the smell of brats in the air, right? I mean, it's like going to the 500 all in one day, you know? It's like it smells, the sights, it's game day. So we hope you'll be here. One of the things I love about this season is the stories, and I saw a story this past week out of the Atlanta Falcons, wide receiver Muhammad Sanu, and he, you know, a story, anytime I see a story of adversity where somebody has just risen above really difficult things, I'm inspired. And this is a guy who, growing up, he had tremendous difficulty in his home life. He was barely hanging on for years and years. He overcame those things, and next weekend is going to be starting for the Atlanta Falcons in Super Bowl 51. How cool is that? And here's what his high school coach said about him. He said he didn't have it easy growing up. There really was no money in his family. He was sleeping on the couch. He didn't have a bedroom. There was no food at home. Every time I drive him home, we'd stop and get him something to eat. There were so many challenges in this kid's life. And this really ties into what we're going to be talking about today as we wrap up this series, I'm Possible. And we're going to be looking at how, you know, in those moments when we're just barely hanging on. Maybe you're barely hanging on this morning to something or to a dream or just a difficulty in your life, and how in the midst of that adversity, God is actually building capacity in us for something more. So, hey, welcome to Crosspoint today. It's great to have you here. My name's Kurt, and if we haven't met, it's great to meet you here this morning. And let me pray for us before we go any further. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for the chance to come into this room. I thank you for every single person who's tuning in online or sitting in this dark room today who's wanting to go after something more. And God, I just pray that you help us to, during our time, move us to new places. Help us to see things we haven't seen. I pray that we would be different people as we leave here today because we've encountered you in some new and fresh way. And so above all else, God, I just pray that what I've prepared would be beneficial, it would be helpful, and that it would be in alignment with your heart. I pray these things according to your name, your character, Jesus. Amen. Well, today we're taking a second look at the figure of Joseph from the Bible. We started with him last week, and I'll give you a real quick catch-up if you weren't here. And this is Joseph, by the way, not the Mary and Joseph of Christmas fame. This is Joseph way before that. This guy's story comes from the first part of the Bible, Genesis. In fact, he's an Old Testament hero. 12 chapters in Genesis are devoted to telling his story. I mean, that is unheard of, unprecedented, to devote 12, you know, that kind of real estate, 12 chapters in the Bible to one figure. And so he starts off as a boy, and he has this dream, and he has this dream, and it's this crazy dream. He sees this big sheaf of wheat, and he says, hey, that's me. He interprets his dream, so that's me. And then he sees all these little sheaves of wheat, and he tells his brothers, he said, those little sheaves are you guys. And you know what happened? Those little sheaves eventually bow down to the big sheaf. Isn't that cool? You guys are going to bow down to me. The brothers didn't think it was very cool. They didn't like that dream at all. And so he told the dream again to his dad, and his dad didn't really like it at all. So basically, none of his family is liking him, and they throw him into a pit, and then they realize, that's not a good idea. We got to sell him. I mean, we get something out of this kid. So they go get him out of the pit, take him, and sell him into slavery. And he eventually, you know, he's in slavery for a while, and he eventually rises up in this guy's house by the name of Potiphar. He's an Egyptian businessman, a very mover shaker in the Egyptian community. And he's working for him. He's kind of working his way up in leadership in his home to where eventually he becomes one of the leader, the manager of his entire estate. He's a great leader at this point. And Potiphar has a lot of success as Joseph is helping lead his estate. Now, something crazy happens, which we really don't have time to get into today, but it's fascinating. Potiphar's wife wants Joseph badly. Right? She wants to sleep with him, but Joseph will have nothing to do with it. And so she accuses him of a sex crime because she's so bitter that he turned her down. And so now Joseph is a known sex predator, even though it's not really true, but nonetheless, everybody thinks that it is. So he's thrown into jail again. And he's now there for a long, long time. And during this time, I mean, Joseph repeatedly is at places where he's just hanging on. I mean, he's just barely hanging on. And I hope what we're able to see today is those moments when we're just hanging on are oftentimes the gateways to where God begins to do something where we take off and go to new places. So, you know, right now for us in this room, in this community, even in our world today, in our culture, you know, one of the problems we have is how good it is, right? I mean, we live in a good country. You can list all the things that are bad, but we live in a great time. We live in a very prosperous, time frame in the history of our world. And I know there are people who don't have jobs in here today. I know there are people who don't like their jobs. I know there's people who are in a difficult place financially, but nonetheless, we can still probably agree that even in light of those things, we live in a very, very prosperous culture. Listen, we live in a culture where you can cook your food in like 30 seconds, right? If you want to buy something from the store, you don't have to go to the store, right? You just like go online and it shows up at your house the next day. We live in a culture, in an era, a time frame, where people in previous eras did not have things that we have. And here's the thing that happens. As innovation and prosperity continues to go on, it's actually shortening the distance of time that you and I have to wait for something. It's one of the benefits. I mean, we don't have to wait for water to boil, right? 30 seconds at best, and all of a sudden the water's boiling in the microwave. You know, when you're sick, you don't have to wait very long to get better because medications are at our disposal. And what actually happens in the midst of this, the shortening wait time, is it really dumbs down our resiliency and our ability to endure, to have to be in waiting for certain things. To the point to where when we have to really wait on something, when we really have to endure and we just feel like we're hanging on, man, we feel like we don't know how to hang on at all because we want it now. There was a study that was done back in the 70s. I've talked about it before. I've actually shown you a video from it. It's called the Marshmallow Experiment. And it's very fascinating. It was actually replicated recently. We showed you a video a few months ago from this. You can go find it on the YouTubes if you want to find it there. And basically, these kids that were in this video, they were given a marshmallow, and they're told, you can eat the marshmallow right now, or you can wait 5 minutes, and you can have another marshmallow. So basically, eat it now, and you get one, or wait 5 minutes, and you get a second one. And so this was an exercise in delayed gratification of, you know, can these kids delay for the reward? Are they able to put off gratification? It's very fascinating. I highly recommend you check it out. But what I didn't know, and what you maybe didn't know until I just learned this recently, is that there were follow-up tests with these original kids that were in this experiment back in the 70s, and one Stanford researcher talks about it. Here's what he says. He says, as the years rolled on and the children grew up, researchers conducted follow-up studies and tracked each child's progress in a number of areas. The results were surprising. The children who were able to delay gratification and waited to receive the second marshmallow ended up having higher SAT scores, lower substance abuse, lower likelihood of obesity, better responses to stress, better social skills as reported by their parents, and generally better scores in a range of other life measures. That's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. And this element is still at play today. This is how God spiritually forms us, how he prepares us to grow. He puts us in situations where we just have to hang on. We just have to wait. We have to hang on. And in the midst of that, our spiritual muscle gets developed. In the midst of that, our spiritual capacity gets developed. He's developing a resiliency. Joseph is resilient. I mean, Joseph is waiting and waiting and waiting for things to change. In fact, Genesis 4, verse 4 says, they continued for some time in custody. This basically just means that they're still in jail. He's still in jail. He and a couple of his guys that he's hanging out in jail with, they're waiting. Maybe this waiting has something to do with his future success. I mean, seriously, there's like 12 chapters devoted to this guy. I mean, I don't think it's just because he was some snotty, arrogant kid who told his brothers, hey, guess what? You're going to worship me one day. How cool is that? I don't think it was just because of that. I mean, haven't even got to the part to where he's changing the world. I mean, he actually is a world changer, but first, there's a resilience and there's a capacity that's developed. You know, we don't develop our capacity very well. We don't like to wait. We don't like to be patient, do we? Anybody love to be patient? Anybody just, man, I just thrive on being patient. That's what I thought. You know, so, you know, if you want to increase your capacity, you have to grow in patience. And you know, what's kind of been weird about this series is, this is somewhat out of our context, is we haven't had a ton of, like, real practical life application things out of this series. This series has been very high level, you know, 50,000 foot view of, you know, do we believe God can do the impossible? Do I believe God has a dream for my life? Can I go after that? Can I just stay after that even when life's not going in a good direction? And so if you're looking for like the real tangible, I can just go out and do this week, here's your next step, all right? This is actually on the back of the connection card if you're interested. So if you need to develop your capacity for patience and endurance, you know, which we probably all do, here's what you ought to do this week. When you go to the Kroger's or you go to the Walmart's or the gas station, look for the longest line and get in it, all right? Usually you look for the shortest line, right? And then here's what most people do. They find the shortest line, and then they find somebody they got in line with them, like at the same time, and the whole time they're gauging. Am I winning? Did I pick the right line? Because we don't have the capacity for patience. So get in the longest line and just say, I'm training myself. Don't get mad. Have a bright, cheery personality. Say, I'm developing endurance. I'm putting off gratification of the food I'm buying a little longer, and I'm growing myself. Or if you don't like that one, drive all week in the slow lane, in the right-hand lane on 465. It'll be awesome. You'll love it, right? But it'll develop perseverance and growth and patience. You'll get endurance when you do that. And you might be thinking, there's no freaking way I'm doing that. That's fine. You don't have to do anything that we encourage you to do, all right? It's totally your call. It's just if you want to grow in endurance, if you want to become more patient and have the ability to when you just need to hang on, to have the ability to get through that, you've got to do something different. We've got to do something different if we want that capacity. So all three points I have today, I want us to understand that time runs through all three of these. Time is a critical element that runs through all three of these. So the first is character is grown through trials. In time, character is grown through trials. Book of James chapter 1 says this, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. See, the problem that our culture has with this verse right here is we don't like trials, do we? We don't like anything that makes us uncomfortable. We don't like anything that challenges us or doesn't help us get to what we want, you know, easily. We don't like to hear anything uncomfortable. In fact, maybe you're familiar with the phrase trigger warnings. This is a popular thing on college campuses today, especially Ivy League schools, where a trigger warning is where a professor in class has to say, trigger warning, for the next 15 seconds, I'm going to say something that might make you really uncomfortable. So if you want to walk out for a moment, you can do that right now. Because God forbid we make you feel a little uncomfortable. And in fact, here's what the Atlantic magazine says about these. It says, the ultimate aim of these trigger warning, it seems, is to turn campuses into safe spaces where young adults are shielded from words and ideas that make some uncomfortable. This movement seeks to punish anyone who interferes with that aim, even accidentally. You might call this impulse vindictive protectiveness. It is creating a culture in which everyone must think twice before speaking up lest they face charges of insensitivity, aggression, or worse. Article goes on to talk about Jeannie Salk, who's a professor at Harvard, also writes for The New Yorker, how some of her fellow law professors at Harvard were asked by students, they said, oh, we don't want to learn about rape law. That's too disturbing. You want to be an attorney and you can't handle like talking about things like rape law? I mean, I get it. I get that it's a disturbing thing, but if you're going to be an attorney, you got to deal with this stuff. Chris Rock, get this, Chris Rock told his publicist, no longer am I speaking at college campuses, I'm done. He said, I'm not going on there. Students today can't handle anything that challenges or makes them uncomfortable. And it was just fascinating. So just so you know, we're never going to have a trigger warning here at Crosspoint. Listen, I'm speaking at a college campus in like 2 weeks. I'm like, holy cow, it's going to be my first and last time. Because I talk about the uncomfortable all the time. That's all I do. In fact, I saw this article this past week. I thought this would be a lot of fun. Spider bites Australian man on penis again. So, just out of curiosity, think of which word makes you most uncomfortable there. Is it spider? How many of you are uncomfortable by the word spider? A couple of you. Penis? Probably a few of us not willing to admit it. Again, I know, isn't it crazy? It's like, seriously, this Australian man, he's a construction worker, goes into the portal, gets bit. You know, he heals up. A couple weeks later, he's like, I'm sitting there again, just minding my business, doing my business, and it happens again. I'm like, dude, you got to stop, you know, just, if you got to use a portalette and sit down, don't do it anymore. Like, stand up only in there. I mean, how does that happen? This is news. It's like real life, right? BBC right there. BBC News. Yeah, see, our world, this is our world. This is our world. Not just the millennial generation, not just our college generation. This is our world. Our world is if there's anything difficult, anything that might make us uncomfortable or that we don't like, we've got to change it. We've got to prevent people from experiencing it because, God forbid, we let somebody be uncomfortable. And in the midst of this, we have a whole development of character that's not happening. Second thing, we have to believe that turbulence increases capacity. Turbulence. Turbulence increases capacity. What's turbulence? Turbulence is resistance. You know, if you're lifting weights, if you're pumping iron, you're creating resistance. The weights are creating resistance, a turbulence, so that your muscles have the capacity to do something beyond what they currently are able to do. You know, if you go to work and you have to go up 10 flights of stairs and you get to the top and you're, you know, huffing and puffing, you're like, okay, I got to create some resistance in my life. I'm going to go out and I'm going to do some cardio. I'm going to run. I'm going to get on the treadmill. I'm going to put some resistance in my legs, in my, you know, in my thighs so that when I get to the top of those stairs, they're not burning every day and I'm not falling over because I've created a capacity for something more than what I previously had. And spiritually, this is how it works as well. See, God brings things into our life that kind of blows in our face. It blows at us, and sometimes it blows so hard, it almost blows us down, and we feel like we're just barely hanging on, and yet in the process, our capacity, our heart grows larger, our spiritual capacity grows larger, and our spiritual fiber gets stronger. See, we see this with Joseph. Joseph is in prison, and he's been in prison. He's got a couple people who've had dreams, and they want him to interpret these dreams. So in Genesis 40, you know, they come to him, and they say, we have a dream. And he's like, do interpretations belong to God? Do these interpretations belong to God? He's like, doesn't God own these? He's like, please tell them to me. Please tell them to me. God and I, we're like one and the same. We're side by side. I mean, he is so arrogant in his younger years. He's just like, you know, God and I, whatever God thinks, I already know. And maybe this is why he has so much adversity, because he is so arrogant. He creates it in his life. But we see later on, a few years later, he goes to Pharaoh, as we're going to kind of break out here in just a moment. And Pharaoh asks him to interpret a dream, and he says, oh, it's not in me. It's not in me. These are from God. God will bring Pharaoh an answer. See, there's a progression that happens in his life right here where because he's been in waiting. He's had time. He's been leaning into God as he's barely been hanging on. And in the midst of this adversity, there's actually a capacity that's been developed. So eventually he interprets a dream for a cupbearer. And this cupbearer goes off and ends up serving back in Pharaoh's house. And Joseph stays in prison for another 2 years. Now let's talk about prison for a moment. Now, let me tell you something about prison. And prison is not the same then as it is today. Prison then was a hellhole. Now, some people would say it's that way today. It was worse. All right, prison, there were no like nonprofit groups that were saying, hey, let's raise funds and make sure our prisons are, you know, are decent. And there's nobody doing that. Prisons were not, you know, rehabilitation facilities so that we can send people back into the general population, you know, contributing to the culture. That's not what prisons were. Prisons were like a dungeon where you're sent to die. I mean, it's like a hellhole. You're just forgotten when you're down there. So Joseph's sitting in this prison for another 2 years. The cupbearer, the guy he interpreted the dreams for, has actually gone back into Pharaoh's house. He's actually serving and leading again. And Joseph's just utterly abandoned for 2 years. I mean, it's awful. It's awful. Not the kind of two-year existence that you would expect a great figure to have. And so for 2 years, Joseph's down here, and then Pharaoh eventually hears, there's this guy, he's been down in prison, and he could actually help you out, Pharaoh. And so he sends for Joseph, brings him up, cleans him up, shaves him, and see, over time, Joseph had a lot of time, and Joseph's heart had been softened while he'd been in prison. Where now, when he comes up and he's asked to interpret a dream, he goes, interpretations, they belong to God. I'm sure God will show what Pharaoh's dream means. See, time does a lot, doesn't it? I've been married for 20 years. 20 years this past year, going into 21 years this summer, and it's interesting. You know, by the way, some people say marriage is a hellhole. Whenever I hear that, I'm like, I tend to disagree with it. I think marriage is awesome. I really do. I think marriage is awesome. I'm very, very pro marriage. One of the best things about marriage is the longer you're in it, the better it gets. It really is. And 20 years in for Julie and I tell you what, the things you learn in 20 years together, Julie and I used to fight much more than we do now. We still fight every now and then. We still have disagreements. But man, we could be in shreds, early in our marriage. And I tell you what, one of the reasons we don't fight the way we used to is we've gotten wiser. Over 20 years, when you're married in your first year, you see something, you're like, why'd you do that? That was stupid. And you realize, well, gosh, she didn't do it exactly the way I would have done it. And now 20 years in, I see something, I'm like, and you don't say anything, right? You just you've learned. And it's not that you don't eventually talk about it, but you realize most things are not worth the argument, right? They're just not worth it. And that helps you have deeper relationships. Another one of the reasons, 20 years in, I feel like, you're better, and some of you are like 30 or 40 years in, you're even better off, is because the longer you're in it, the longer you've had the ability to handle turbulence together. See, turbulence is when you go through things and you deal with the hard parts of relationships, deal with difficult things, whether together or maybe somebody violates the other, but you tend to lean in and growth happens. And I tell you what, there's times when you're just hanging on, but you're better because of it. You may be having a hard time in college, just hanging on. You may be having a hard time in your job, just hanging on, just trying to figure out, what am I here for? All right, see, here's the thing. You don't get grown during spring break in college. You get grown during finals week, right? You'd be like, I need to go on spring break, man. It's part of the experience. It is, but you get grown. Your capacity develops when you're pressed during finals week. I was sitting at Houlihan's this last week with one of my friends who's a former drug addict. And he said something to me. He said, somebody asked me recently if I had my life to do over again, if I would do it differently, if I would not take the path of drugs, which is never a choice, by the way. And he looked at me and said, is that a weird question? And he said, I looked at him and I said, no, it sounds weird, but no, I wouldn't do it differently. Now, if I had my chance, I wish all the pain and hurt that it created from people and me was different. But he said, you know what? Because of the adversity I've gone through in the process of getting clean, it's made me the person I am today. I never would have been this person. See, turbulence creates capacity. In fact, we're going to be intentionally creating some difficulty here in about a month. It's called Man Camp 2017. Yes. I'm excited about Man Camp. Yeah, we're going to be having a Man Camp this year, February 24, 25, and we're going to be roughing it, all right? Men, if you're interested in going to Man Camp, there's limited space, so if you want to sign up, get into the app, and I believe it's under, is it under Man Events, XPT Men? What's happening in the XPT Men? Yes, there's limited space on this. We're not doing a resort vacation, by the way, all right? This will be roughing it, sleeping in tents in the middle of February with no doors on them, by the way, roughing the elements. There's no running water, peeing into holes in the ground. There's only like portalettes that are in the ground. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be awesome, but it's also, there's going to be some cool stuff there as well. It's just that, we're toying. We go to a hotel. We're like, you don't grow at a hotel. All right, when you're in a resort setting, you don't grow. It's when you're in the elements dealing with the adversity and doing like rough, stuff. And somebody said, do I have to grow a beard and look like that to go? No. All right, now you might look more like that when you come home, but no. So get in the app, sign up if you're interested. It's going to be an awesome, awesome time. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11 says this. It says, for in the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. See, no difficulty, no tension, no turbulence. When we're in that moment, we don't like it. We don't like it. But later on, we go, oh man, I'm glad I experienced that. This is the problem that all Americans face. It doesn't matter what age you are. Last week I said, we look at the millennial culture. This isn't just millennials. This is all of us. It's every people group in our country. Saw something recently on the millennial generation in the workplace by Simon Sinek, and he talked about the millennial generation, which I think really applies to all of us. Take a look at this. I think you'll enjoy it.
Now you add in the sense of impatience, right? They've grown up in a world of instant gratification. You want to buy something, you go on Amazon, it arrives the next day. You want to watch a movie? Log on and watch a movie. You don't check movie times. You want to watch a TV show? Binge. You don't even have to wait week to week to week, right? I know people who skip seasons just so they can binge at the end of the season, right? Instant gratification. You want to go on a date? You don't even have to learn how to be like, hey. You don't even have to learn and practice that skill. You don't have to be the uncomfortable one who says yes when you mean no and says no when you mean no and yes when you... You don't have to swipe right. Bang, I'm a stud. Right? You don't have to learn the social coping mechanisms. Right? Everything you want, you can have instantaneously. Everything you want, instant gratification. Except job satisfaction and strength of relationships, there ain't no app for that. They are slow, meandering, uncomfortable, messy processes. And so I keep meeting these wonderful, fantastic, idealistic, hardworking, smart kids. They've just graduated school. They're in their entry-level job. And I sit down with them and I go, how's it going? They go, I think I'm gonna quit. I'm like, why? They're like, I'm not making an impact. I'm like, you've been here 8 months. You know? It's as if they're standing at the foot of a mountain and they have this abstract concept called impact that they want to have in the world, which is the summit. What they don't see is the mountain. I don't care if you go up the mountain quickly or slowly, but there's still a mountain. And so what this young generation needs to learn is patience. That some things that really, really matter, like love, or job fulfillment, joy, love of life, self-confidence, a skill set, any of these things, all of these things take time. Sometimes you can expedite pieces of it, but the overall journey is arduous and long and difficult. And if you don't ask for help and learn that skill set, you will fall off the mountain, or you will, the worst case scenario, and we're already seeing it, the worst case scenario is we're seeing an increase in suicide rates. We're seeing an increase in this generation. We're seeing an increase in accidental deaths due to drug overdoses. We're seeing more and more kids drop out of school or take leaves of absence due to depression. Unheard of. This is really bad. The best case scenario, those are all bad cases, right? The best case scenario is you'll have an entire population growing up and going through life and just never really finding joy.
Isn't that great? Yeah, this is here for Simon, man. Yeah, see, we realize that when we don't have the tension, when we don't have the trial, when we don't have the turbulence, when we don't have the adversity, that at times causes me to just be hanging on, then I'm not equipped for that thing later. And we often struggle to understand God later. See, Pharaoh has this dream, and it's a really weird dream, and he sees these skinny emancipated cows, and they're coming up out of the river, and these itsy-bitsy little cows are actually going and eating these 7 really big, healthy cows, and it freaks him out. He wakes up, and he goes, man, I don't think that was just a dream by bad pizza, you know? That was like, there's something spiritual here going on in the spiritual realm. Who can help me on this? So he calls in all the spiritual gurus, everybody who reads dreams, and nobody knows what the dream means. Nobody can nail it. And there's one guy in the room, the cupbearer, who's drinking the cup of the... You know, here's what the cupbearer did. The cupbearer's job is to drink the wine right before he gives it to the king to make sure there's no poison in it. How'd you like that job? That'd give you some hope, right? Man, if it knocks me off, then I guess the king doesn't get it. I mean, that's an interesting job. The cupbearer, he's right there with the king, and 2 years earlier, it dawns on him, oh, I had a dream. He said, Pharaoh, I know a guy. There was a guy when I was in prison that, I mean, me and another guy, we had a dream, and this guy nailed our dream. I bet he's still there. So Pharaoh says, all right, let's bring him up. They bring Joseph up out of prison. And you think Joseph would be excited about this, right? He's got another shot. He's got another chance to kind of show himself. But look at this from Joseph's perspective just for a moment, all right? So his experience with dreams is not good, right? Every time he has a dream and interprets it, something happens that's not good. I mean, he has a dream and his brothers hate him, tells it to his dad. His dad is pretty upset with him as well. You know, he talks about a dream another time. He's thrown into prison. And everybody kind of forgets about him. So I mean, he's thrown into prison. He's forgotten. He's sold into slavery. He's beaten down. He's alone. The only through line in all of this is dreams. And now he's standing before the most powerful individual in the world, Pharaoh. And he has a dream. And he's like, man, this dude could totally jack me up. He could totally jack me up. Joseph's like, don't know if I want to interpret this dream. I mean, you almost get the sense that he's kind of getting weary right here. Like he's just barely hanging on. But he's like, all right, I'll hear the dream. He hears the dream. He says, all right, here's the answer. Here's what it is. Here's the deal. He says, these 7 big fat cows means for the next 7 years, Egypt's going to go gangbusters up and to the right. He says, everything's going to go up and to the right. The country's going to be thriving. GDP, earnings, grain. You know, everything's going to be amazing for 7 years. And then you're going to take a turn, and for the next 7 years, it's going to be utter famine. Those are the seven skinny cows eating the seven fat cows. There's going to be a famine that's going to decimate the region. I mean, everything you stored up is going to be decimated. It's going to wipe everything out. That's the answer. Pharaoh goes, oh, wow, okay. That's a lot. That's pretty heavy. And he goes, okay, well, who can oversee this? I mean, it's going to take some really good planning for the next 7 years so that we can get through the following 7 years. Now you have to think that Pharaoh had done some research on Joseph before he called him up out of prison, right? He hears about this guy who's been really good with dreams. He interprets them well. He has them well. He also knows he once worked for Potiphar, another Egyptian official, successful business guy who's very wealthy. He was the leader of his estate. His estate went up and to the right the whole time that Joseph was working for him. I mean, he knew this dude knows how to lead things. He's a great manager of things. And all of a sudden, bam, Joseph tags Pharaoh with this impactful dream interpretation, one of the most spiritually moving moments of Pharaoh's life. And Pharaoh looks at him and he says, Joseph, I need you to be my COO. I need you to take the next 7 years and make a future for the nation of Egypt. And that's exactly what Joseph does. The whole future of the country now is resting in Joseph's leadership. And so for the next 7 years, he puts aside a fifth every year. A fifth of everything they bring in grain-wise, 20% of their grain, they store it, they put it away every year. I mean, there's cities being built that are just warehouses of grain. And now today, to us, we're like, grain, I like grain, I'm gluten-free. And, you know, I mean, we don't like grain, right? But the whole human race has always been dependent on grain. If you don't have grain, you don't survive. You're like, well, I can't have bread, Kurt. Yes, you can. You can't have bread. No, I can't have bread. Bread's not organic. It's got gluten-free. All right, well, yes. I mean, here's the thing. What did they used to call organic bread? Bread, yeah. Up to like 20 years ago, now it's not organic. We got a label. Everything was organic back then. All I'm trying to say is if you didn't have bread, you were done. The whole world's economy depended on if you could survive and you had grain to have bread. And so for 7 years, the nation of Egypt, through Joseph's leadership, is putting grain aside. And then all of a sudden, bam, the famine hits. But Egypt is okay because they have grain. Guess who isn't okay? The surrounding nations, all the surrounding countries, they start coming to Pharaoh to make deals to buy his grain. Actually, they start coming to Joseph to make deals to buy grain. They're trading everything, anything, land, cattle, gold. I mean, as this happens, Egypt's wealth is just going up and to the right. They're becoming incredibly wealthy. Third big idea, we have to believe that over time, that tension creates clarity. Tension creates clarity. See, I have to believe that while Joseph was having all this tension, while he was in waiting, while he was things weren't going the way, while he was just barely hanging on, that there was something happening where a spiritual clarity was coming to him. This is what happens in our businesses. This is what happens in our families. This is what happens in our organizations that we run. See, scarcity always creates clarity. I mean, when things are scarce, when you operate in scarcity mode, maybe financially you're like, I don't have much, so I've really got to be intentional with using what I have and maximizing it and deciding what's important and what's not because I don't have very much. See, you've got to figure that out when you don't have very much. And I believe Joseph was in such scarcity mode that he's lived in that tension, and now it's giving him spiritual clarity for a moment such as this. And so in this moment right here, in this moment, neighboring nations begin coming to him for help. Guess who's in these neighboring nations? His brothers. His brothers, you know, the ones that sold him, the ones that, you know, said, hey, you know, we're gonna sell you off, put you in a pit. His brothers are there. You know, his dad's in the neighboring nation. His dad, who thought he was dead, who was upset with him. Take a look at what happens. Years and years have gone by. They've not seen him in years. And here's what happens next. It says, now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them. I don't even know if Joseph remembered the first dream that got him in so much trouble, you know, with the sheaves and the wheat, and you're going to bow down. I don't even know if he's remembering that or not. So here he is. He's all now painted up as an Egyptian, right? He's an Egyptian. Egyptian leader. He's painted up like an Egyptian. He's walking like an Egyptian, you know. I mean, he's Egyptian through and through, and he's changed. His brothers, they haven't even given a second thought to him for years. They thought he was dead. He's changed over time, and here they come walking up to him, and he's now, they recognize him. He's the second most powerful figure in the entire world, and they walk him. What do? They go, oh. They bow. And he goes, oh, the dream. This was my dream. He remembers the dream. See, here's the thing. God gives us dreams, and we have visions for the future, but they're incomplete. They're really incomplete. We get visions, but sometimes we just have to be resilient and hang on, just barely hang on, because it just doesn't seem like it's coming about. I mean, we think we understand what the future is, but we really don't. We're just operating with like the knowledge we have right now in the moment. Right? It hasn't been fleshed out through tension. It hasn't been fleshed out through difficulty. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, time and tension do their work, and sometimes it's weeks, sometimes it's months, sometimes it's years, sometimes it's decades. But see, the dream doesn't change, but your interpretation or your understanding or your application of the dream does. See, Joseph never saw all of this in a dream. He had no idea he was going to be the king of the second in command of Egypt. He never knew he was going to be running, you know, the food supply for the world power at the time. He had no idea his brothers would literally be coming to him, selling to buy a little grain just so they could live a few more days. I mean, he had no idea. So I don't know what this says to you as we kind of wrap up this series of I'm Possible. And we could go on and on for weeks on this, but I want you to take a look at the next steps on the back of your connection card. And I don't know, if you, maybe you need to do something practical in patience. Maybe God's building you in capacity right now. Or maybe you're in tension and turbulence and there's some spiritual clarity that's still being formed. I don't know. All I know is this, that if you have a dream, don't forget that dream. All right, and also, don't hold so tightly to the interpretation of that dream that there's not room for new possibilities to come about. See, that's the beauty of Joseph's story, right? I mean, the dream was real. The dream happened, and as things went forward, so did Joseph. So that tension you're in right now, whatever it is, I mean, you might be like, life sucks, and I can't believe I'm right here. Hey, maybe it really doesn't. Maybe God's got you right in his hands, and he's molding and shaping you, and he's broadening your capacity in the midst of that. Or maybe you just feel like you're barely hanging on, and you're like, when am I going to get out of this season in my life? Maybe God knows you're not ready for the next season yet, and there's a capacity that's being developed. I mean, the fact that we're sitting right here, right now, in this place, I mean, it blows me away, to be honest. I mean, we had a dream when we started Crosspoint. We had a dream that this would be a place, not this physical place, but Crosspoint would be a place where people come to see Jesus for who he really is. People who had given up on church but were interested in God would be able to come and see that there's a God who runs after them and pursues them and loves them, doesn't condemn them, but wants to restore, based on what he did, a relationship with us. I mean, we had no idea we'd be sitting 200 yards across the street diagonally from the school that we launched in 10 years ago. We had all these different ideas of where Crosspoint was going to be, locations that we pursued that fell through. We had financing at times that just didn't come about, and we had to circle back around and think, man, God gave us a dream, but we're not really accomplishing it. There were moments where we were looking for the right opportunity, and we gave up on that. We're like, God, we're just looking for an opportunity. I mean, we're just trying to say, God, what's the next thing? And of course, we never dreamed this is what it would be. But this is how God fleshed it out. And the same is true with you. The same is true with you. Don't feel so certain about your future that when things don't go exactly the way you want them to go, that you're like, oh, something's wrong. Maybe nothing's wrong. Maybe things aren't going your way because God's trying to show you the way they need to go. You know, maybe you're in the midst of the difficult right now because God's trying to increase your muscle mass. He's like, man, the things I've got in store, you're going to have a lot bigger capacity, and you're not there yet. So yeah, you're in the midst of some difficulty right now. Maybe there's tension because there's some clarity that needs to be focused. All right? Just don't lose the dream just because it's difficult. God, thank you. Thank you for this powerful, powerful story of Joseph. God, I pray that the dreams that are in this room, that are within earshot of anyone who's listening, anybody who's been listening to these truths, these things from your word, God, help us to see that you do dream dreams for us. None of us fully understand your dream. We can't fully understand your dream. You give us enough to continue to motivate us. But God, we just at times have to keep hanging on. We have to be resilient a little longer. We have to be patient. Sometimes it seems like it's never going to end. God, I just pray that you would help us to grow in our capacity in those moments until things come into focus, until we see that you're greater and you're bigger and you're working things beyond what I ever imagined or had any idea that you were doing. God, just lead us in that way. Help us to see this as we wrap this up today. In your name, amen. All right, let's stand to our feet. We're going to sing one more song that just reminds us that God is greater. God is greater.